यशोदनन्दन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदनन्दन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारु यमुना तीरावन चारु जय राधा माधव कंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी राधा माधव कुंज जन्नवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोदनन्दन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदनन्दन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदनन्दन यमुना तीरावन चारु यमुना तीरावन चारु यमुना तीरावन चारु हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण न हरे 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 कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे कृष्णा हरे 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 कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय राधा श्याम सुंदर राधा श्याम सुंदर राधे जय प्रभुपदा जय प्रभुपदा जय प्रभुपदा अखिल प्रभुपदा
जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिवाजिकाचार्य स्तोत्र सदशिशिना स्वामी गृह शिले श्री भक्तिनाथ स्वामी शिव प्रभुपाद की। Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Gaur Premanandi, all gloriously assembled devotees, all gloriously assembled devotees, all gloriously assembled devotees, all gloriously assembled devotees, all gloriously assembled devotees. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Canto 1, Chapter 16, verse number 2. How Parikshit received the age of Kali. Sa uttadasya tanayam. Sa uttadasya tanayam. Upayema iravatim. Upayema iravatim. Janame jaya dims vaturas. Janame jaya dims chaturas. Tasyam utpadayat sutam. Tasyam utpadayat sutam. Sa uttarasya tanayam. Upayema iravatim. Janame jayadim chaturas. Tasyam utpadayat sutam. Uttarasya tanayam. Upayena iravatim. Janamejaya dim chaturas. Sahi Uttarasya of King Uttara, Tanayam, daughter, Upayeme, married, Iravatim, Iravati, Janamejaya Adin, headed by Maharaj Janamejaya, Chatura, four, Tasyam, in her, Utpadayat, begot, Sutan, sons. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. King Parikshit married the daughter of King Uttara and begot four sons, headed by Maharaj Janamejaya. Purport. Maharaj Uttara was the son of Iravata, the maternal uncle of Maharaj Parikshit. Iravati, being the daughter of Maharaj Uttara, was the cousin sister of Maharaj Parikshit. But cousin brothers and sisters were allowed to get married if they did not belong to the same gotra or family. In the Vedic system of marriage, the importance of the gotra or family was stressed. Arjuna also married Subhadra, although she was his maternal cousin's sister. Janamejaya, one of the Rajarshi kings, and the famous son of Maharaj Parikshit. His mother's name was Iravati, or according to some, Madhravati. Maharaj Janamejaya begot two sons of the name Gyatanika and Sankukarna. He celebrated several sacrifices in the Kurukshetra pilgrimage site, and he had three younger brothers named Shrutasena, Ugrasena, and Bhimasena II. He invaded Takshashila, Ajanta, and he decided to avenge the awful, unlawful curse upon his great father, Maharaj Parikshit. He performed a great sacrifice called Sarpa Yajna to kill the serpent, to kill the race of serpents, including the Takshaka, which had bitten his father to death. On request from many influential demigods and sages, he had to change his decision to kill the race of snakes. But despite stopping the sacrifice, he satisfied everyone concerned in the sacrifice by rewarding them properly. In the ceremony, Mahamuni Vyas also was present, and he personally narrated the history of the Battle of Kurukshetra before the king. Later on, by the order of Vyasadeva, his disciple Vaishampayana narrated before the king the subject matter of Mahabharata. He was much affected by his great father's untimely death and was very anxious to see him again. And he expressed his desire before the great sage Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva also fulfilled his desire. His father was present before him, and he worshipped both his father and Vyasadeva with great respect and pomp. Being fully satisfied, he most munificently gave charity to the brahmanas present at the sacrifice. Om Magyana Timidandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kalamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatadine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So, we just concluded the section on the Pandavas retiring timely. And that previous chapter is describing how when Arjuna had come back and Yudhishthira Maharaj was asking him, why are you so sad? Why are you so dejected? What's wrong? Have you disrespected someone? Has someone disrespected you? What has happened? Have you been defeated by somebody less qualified? All of these things. And so then Arjuna was explaining all the different reasons that he was sad. But the main reason he was sad, he was dejected, was that he learned that Krishna had left this planet. That Krishna had left him alone in this world. And we know that Arjuna and Krishna were the closest of friends. And that they... wherever Krishna is, Arjuna is there with him in some capacity. Now imagine somebody you've spent that much time with and all of a sudden decides to leave you. So that's definitely a very... and this is not just somebody, it's God that's left him. So the attachment we can't even conceive of. Arjuna, in all of the 15th chapter, it's the whole chapter is a mood of separation that Arjuna is experiencing. It's literally what that is. It's just Arjuna's mood of separation. He says that, I have lost him whose separation for a moment would render all the universes unfavorable and void, like bodies without life. And that's how Arjuna's feeling. And then he's remembering, of course, all the wonderful times that they spent together and all the ways that Krishna helped Arjuna and the Pandavas. He's remembering that. And so, after this, now we are... then we know that the Pandavas actually do retire timely. They leave home,
And then Draupadi also leaves. So everybody's gone. And now we're talking about Parikshit Maharaj and how Parikshit Maharaj came into this world. And in this, and then of course here is talking about who Parikshit married, and it's talking about Janamejaya, who is one of the famous sons of Maharaj Parikshit. And Janamejaya, it's explained here, is obviously in this section here, in the second chapter of, sorry, in the second paragraph of this, of the purport, he is performing a great sacrifice called the Sarpa Yagya to kill the race of serpents. Especially and including Takshaka, which had bitten his father to death. And so he was naturally very upset, as I think any one of us would be if somebody cursed one of our family members to die and they actually did die because of that curse. And you know that it was because of this curse that they died. Like if somebody was the cause of the death of a close family member like this, a father, a mother, a brother, or sister, or child, naturally the amount of hatred and anger and sort of like vengeful feelings inside of us would consume us. We probably would never be able to forgive that human being. It would probably be next to impossible for us to forgive that person. And sometimes you may get justice and sometimes you may not. That's just how the world is. Right? That's just how the world is. Sometimes you think you should get justice and you don't. And sometimes you do. Right? The world is it's a very complicated place, and the way the whole thing is working with karma and justice and Krishna's mercy and who knows what else is involved, sometimes you don't get it. But here, Janamejaya Maharaj had a way to get justice. He had a way to avenge his father's death, which was, and the thing is, he was qualified to do this yagya, and he had enough people, he had the right people who could do this yagya for him to actually kill the race of serpents, like killing up all the serpents everywhere. So of course we don't know how that would have affected the ecological order of things, killing off a specific species and all the contributions that every species makes on this planet. But in his sort of fit of anger and rage and frustration, he wasn't able to think with a lot of clarity, and he decided he's just going to go ahead with this yagya and kill the main serpent who killed his father and every other serpent around. And so I think that this very nicely and very with a lot of clarity explains to us a key teaching within our tradition, the Bhagavad Gita and all throughout Bhagavatam, is just the impact anger and rage can have in our life and how it can impact us to do immoral, unethical, sinful things in our life. Because as the Bhagavad Gita very nicely explains, that when we are overtaken by anger, then in verse 63 of chapter 2, the Bhagavad Gita says, from anger, complete delusion arises. Not partial delusion, not 50% or 60%, complete delusion. And what are we seeing here? Because of the death of his father, he's willing to kill an entire race of species. That's what's called complete delusion. But we're not just saying him, we've all experienced complete delusion in our life, because when we feel like we've been treated unfairly, and some unfair treatment is always going to be there, but this is talking about the death of a family member. So this is obviously at an extreme level. So we can understand, we can definitely all relate to his rage, relate to his anger, and even relate to his vengeful tendencies. It's very easy to relate to that. I can definitely remember times when people have hurt me. I would think maybe even if it wasn't intentional, but I can just remember how badly I wanted to avenge that. fortunately, I didn't go through with anything, but I was just like, ooh, I know. And I knew I had ways that I could take revenge on this person, which would really feel great to the false ego, but it would have just created a ton of more karma for me. Because that would have happened to me again, at least in this life or next life. Like basically, if I had a ticket to go back to Gaia, that ticket would have been postponed. I think it would have just been like just getting a postponement for that. So a lot of times we get tested because we have the opportunity to take revenge. We get that test by somehow the opportunity would manifest. And now the option is put in front of us. And now we have to make that all-important choice. Do we do that or do we not? And hopefully we'll have the intelligence to decide that, hey, this is because of my own karma, it came into my life, better just to deal with it and ask Krishna to help me understand why this is happening, ask Krishna to help me become a better person because of it and not take revenge on this individual or these individuals. So, and throughout our scriptures we see many examples of individuals who've been overtaken by anger and who acted in ways that could have been very, very detrimental to others. And some of them did act in ways that was very detrimental to others. One example, I'm going to give just a few examples of individuals who actually acted out of vengeance and anger. One was, it took place in the Mahabharata, when Dronacharya found out that his son Ashwatthama had been killed. But of course this was a lie, because Dronacharya was on a rampage that one day in the battlefield. He was not the general after Bhishma had passed away, was on the bed of arrows, I don't know if he passed away. But Drona was not the general, and at some point he went on a complete rampage, destroying huge areas of the Pandava army. And they realized that there's no way to stop this person. Like, he's got weapons that no one, and he's the one who's taught everybody those weapons on that battlefield. So he's got maybe stuff in his arsenal that he hasn't taught to people. He's just unstoppable at this point. And so then they realized, Krishna realized, that the only way he's going to lose his enthusiasm for fighting is if he thinks that his son is dead, because that will kill all of his enthusiasm. He just won't want to do anything else. And they're like, well, the only way he's going to believe it is if Maharaj Yudhishthira says it, because Yudhishthira never tells a lie. And everybody trusts Yudhishthira blindly. So other people were saying it. I think Bhima was saying that, oh, Ashwatthama's dead, but he didn't really believe him. Then when he heard this, he said, okay, I have to go to Yudhishthira to find out if this is true. And now Dronacharya is on his way to Yudhishthira Maharaj. And Krishna is saying, you gotta say it. And if Yudhishthira, it's so difficult for him to lie, he can't get himself to say that Ashwatthama's dead. And then Bhima's like, you have to say this. Look, he's coming our way. You have to say this. If you don't, the battle is over and we're going to go back into the forest. That's what's going to happen. You have to say it. Then finally, Yudhishthira Maharaj, after being coerced and convinced, he says it, but he kind of changes it. He says, Ashwatthama is dead. And then in a very soft voice, he says, the elephant. Ashwatthama, the elephant is dead. But in a really loud voice, he said, Ashwatthama is dead. Because on the other side of the battlefield, there was an elephant named Ashwatthama who was dead, who was killed. And so they killed that elephant so they could say that Ashwatthama is dead. And then when Drona heard Yudhishthira say this, he realized this couldn't be a lie. And at that point, he gave up fighting right away. He sat down into a meditation right there on the battlefield. It's amazing. You're in the middle of a war, killing people. And it's really amazing how, I was thinking about this, like, he was able to just calm himself down, sit down, and go into full samadhi. Like, the drop of a dime. Imagine you're in the, well, I don't know if you want to imagine it, but just imagine it for the sake of, for this class right now. You're in the middle of, like, killing someone on a battlefield, and at the drop of a dime, you're sitting down, completely peaceful, control your breath and mind, and you leave your body. Like, we can't do that during japa. We can't do that. And he was able to do it in the middle of, like, chaos. Like, the worst kind of chaos you can imagine is a battlefield. Right, there's blood all around, there's bodies all around, there's people dying, people dead. And he's able to basically sat down, he started meditating, and he left his body. He had that much self-control. He was such an incredible yogi. He left his body. And his body just remained sitting there. And now, Dushtadumna, who had been prophesied to kill Drona, so, and this was a little ugly, so he goes over there. Drona's already left his body, so he's dead, but he's sitting there. Dushtadumna grabs him by the hair and chops his head off. And everybody, even on the Pandava side, react to this. Like, oh, this was horrible. How could you kill our teacher in this way? This was ugly. This was unethical. He's like, well, I was prophesied to kill him, so I did. You know, this was a prophecy. And in those days, they took prophecies really seriously. If you were prophesied to do something, you're going to do it somehow. Otherwise, who knows what happens. So he kills him. And even Arjuna got upset. Bhima wasn't upset. Arjuna got upset. He got upset at Dhrishtadyumna for doing it. He got upset at Maharaj Yudhishthir for giving the order. He even got upset at Krishna. He actually got upset at Krishna for suggesting it to Maharaj Yudhishthir. So Arjuna was a little upset, and not a little, quite upset because his teacher just died. And then Ashwatthama, his son found out, right? Drona's son found out that my father was just killed. How? Like, while sitting in meditation, he wasn't even holding a weapon, and that his head was chopped off by Dhrishtadyumna, like, in such a brutal and ugly way. And of course, in that moment, they all forgot how they just killed Abhimanyu not too long ago. Of course, you know, everybody forgets what they've done. Everybody forgot that. Somehow Arjuna forgot that Drona had orchestrated the killing of Abhimanyu in an ugly way just a couple days before that. Somehow he forgot that. I mean, everybody, I guess what I'm realizing is reading some of this, reading some of the parts of the Mahabharata, is that human, we're incredibly complicated beings. We just cannot understand ourselves. We should be surprised when people do really strange and awkward things, because we're capable of doing all of those strange and awkward things that we think others are, oh, how horrible that this person could do this. Well, you know, it wouldn't take a lot for us to end up doing that same horrible thing if we got pushed in a certain way. Literally. We're incredibly complex and emotionally, psychologically. It's just hard to imagine, like, Arjuna actually gets upset at Krishna after hearing the whole Bhagavad Gita and everything, and how after Krishna's protecting him day and night from this battle, he gets upset at Krishna for telling him to tell a lie, you know, telling Yudhishthira to tell a lie. Anyways, it's very complicated. Human beings are extremely complicated. So what Ashwatthama does, he launches the Brahmastra, the Narayanastra, which can basically kill everyone. There's no weapon more powerful. Luckily, and he's planning to just kill the whole army and everyone. Innocent people will die too with this thing. So again, he lost his cool, and out of rage and wanting to avenge his father's death, kind of like Jananajaya, he launches his weapon, and this weapon is, if you try to fight the weapon, you die. The only way to survive it is to surrender to the weapon and put your weapons down. And so Krishna told everyone that, and they survived. So this was, of course, a powerful example again of how rage and the desire for revenge can bring about so much, destruction in our life and the life of those around us. And it's just something we have to think about. How much are we under the control of rage and anger? It's such a scary thing, actually, because it can literally lead us to kill someone. And these examples are about the emotion of anger taking you to such a degree that you could actually end up taking another human being's life. Like, and I think to some degree, deep down inside, we all have that capacity. Maybe we don't want to admit it, but I think if any one of us got pushed too far and the opportunity arose that you could possibly get away with it and maybe nobody would know, you wonder how many of us would actually go through that act. especially if you don't have a philosophy of karma behind you. But even if you do, it's not like devotees haven't done some pretty interesting and creative stuff in the past. And this we're reading about it in scripture as well. These are all devotees. We're talking about pretty high-level devotees here. Right? It's like Janamejaya Maharaj, the son of Parikshit Maharaj. These are highly elevated individuals. And there's another couple of very interesting examples of just the power of rage and how it can blind us. Another one is, you know, when the battle is over, when the whole battle is over, and Dhritarashtra is there, Gandhari is there, the Pandavas are there, and Krishna is there, Dhritarashtra is saying, oh, I want to embrace Bhima. I want to forgive and forget everything that's happened. Because, you know, Bhima was the one who killed all of their 100 sons. So that's, you know, that's got to be a major thorn in Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, is wherever, right? It's got to be a major thorn. Because this person single-handedly killed very brutally, some of them very brutally, all of their sons. So we can't imagine the hate that exists inside Dhritarashtra, even though the whole thing was his fault. He could, as the king, could have stopped the whole massacre from taking place. But he didn't. He let it happen, and now he's got so much hate towards Bhima. He says, I want to embrace Bhima and just let go of everything, and I just want to forgive him. Krishna knew that that's not what he wants to do. So they had a big steel statue of Bhima. They said, let's push this towards Dhritarashtra and let Dhritarashtra embrace him. The steel statue, because Dhritarashtra is blind, so he can't see that he's embracing a steel statue. And he starts to embrace the statue, and he embraces it so hard, with so much anger, he crushes it. He crushes it. And this was what he wanted. He wanted to kill Bhima. And then he was saying, oh, what happened? Playing stupid. Did Bhima just die because of my embrace? Oh, what happened? Is that what happened? How come no one is mourning his death? What happened? And Krishna said, you are a villainous crook. This was not Bhima. If this was Bhima, who's stronger than you, and you tried to do this to him, who do you think would have been killed? He would have crushed you and made you into powder. If this was the real Bhima. So I saved you and exposed your villainous mentality in front of everyone. So you can see, right, again, the power of anger, what he could do, and what he tried to do in front of everyone, and ultimately got embarrassed. And this, you know, this other example, of course, is of Gandhari. And it's really interesting, because with Gandhari, she was also, now she's the mother, right? So she's the mother of the children that were killed by Bhima. And so after this whole thing happens, and even after Dhritarashtra does this, publicly tries to kill Bhima, Gandhari ends up having a conversation with Krishna. And in her conversation, she's asking Krishna a lot of different questions. It's a really lengthy conversation, actually. And she's saying that, Krishna, I know you're God. So it's really interesting. She knows he's God, by the way. She's saying, I know you're omnipotent. And what I want to know is, being omnipotent, and you're God, you're all-powerful, why didn't you stop this massacre from happening? You could have stopped, prevented my children from dying. You're God. And I didn't actually realize that she knew that he was God, but I guess a lot of people knew that this is the divine, or maybe Krishna revealed it to her at that time, whatever, but she was aware that he could have stopped everything, that he was God. He's omnipotent. He's like, so you're calling me omnipotent. And this is after the conversation goes on. And he says, well, look, I'm having a hard time convincing you of what just happened. You're not even believing me that I couldn't stop this. I tried to stop your son. He didn't listen. You've gotten so much good counsel. And you all just didn't listen. What can I do? And then she's like, yeah, but now I'm suffering. He's like, yeah, I know you're suffering. But you're not the only ones who lost children. There's millions of women who are just suffering just like you. Are you suffering for them as well? Or just the people on your side? She's like, well, at least I'm suffering for myself right now. He's like, yeah, but you're a queen, you're a great lady. You should at least save some space in your heart to suffer for the other women that are now widowed and, you know, and have no children because of your sons, because of the doing of your husband, and because of you. You're the reason for all of this. So Krishna didn't ease up on her, because she's like kind of blaming Krishna right now. She's blaming Krishna. So he didn't ease up on her. And then they go back and forth, and Krishna provides amazing answers. He's like, do you understand? She's like, no, my heart is not satisfied. I'm very angry. And you are crooked in your decision, what you did. And I'm going to, and I curse you that you will have to die alone. And not just that, you'll have to watch your family kill each other brutally. Wow. She curses the omnipotent God who's standing in front of her. Look at what the human mind is capable of. If we ever question why we're in the material world, a lot of these situations can help us understand that. She curses God to his face. And Krishna just laughs. He says, you know, curses don't really act upon me. I allow them to be instruments in my life, in my pastimes. So they don't act upon me. So when I was reading this, I was just so bewildered and amazed that you have God standing in front of you. And because God is giving each one of us the free will to act and say as we please, He never takes that away. We can literally choose to act like Gandhari, like cursing God. Or even Duryodhana, look at the same, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, right? Duryodhana, when Krishna went as a peacemaker, he tried to capture Krishna. Like you see, the fruit really doesn't fall far from the tree. It just like landed right there. Right? Like mother, like son. Isn't it? Like she curses him. And it just took me a while to like, I just couldn't stop thinking about, wow, that is the power of free will. That we can do this and maybe we haven't cursed, maybe we have cursed God. Well, I'm pretty sure we've cursed God at some point in our journey. We probably cursed God. I got angry at God. I'm sure we've done it plenty of time. She did it face to face. She did it face to face. It's just a very powerful thing what human emotions are actually capable of. And so, and we know that that's when the Yadu dynasty, you know, they kill each other in such a crazy way. So, you know, and we're talking about like Ashwatthama, Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, and these are obviously not the most prominent, like, they're infamous in personalities within the Mahabharata. But then, it's not just them. We also have devotees described in the Mahabharata who have come under the influence of anger and gone the path of vengeance. And can anybody think of one individual who, from the Bhagavatam, has gone on that path? A devotee. Pure devotee. Oh, Parashuram, okay. Yeah. Not the example I had in mind, but that's a good example. Dhruva Maharaj? Right? That's what you said? Yeah. That's the example I was thinking of, Dhruva Maharaj. Because he went, right? The Yakshas had killed his brother. And so he went to kill the Yakshas. And he got so engrossed in the fighting, he started to just like kill and kill and kill. He was killing all of them. And then finally, I believe Swayambhuva Manu had to come and request him to stop this because these are all the followers of Kuvera. And he said that you can please Kuvera by just stopping doing what you're doing. And Kuvera then said, yes, you know, only one of them killed your brother. You don't have to kill the whole group of them, millions of them. So, anyway, and Dhruva, of course, his ticket was to Godhead, was already promised by God. It was not one of those things that would ever get postponed. Even if there was a pandemic, his flight was taking off. Right? All the borders were closed. His flight was definitely taking off. He had one of those tickets that's rare to come by. So, and whatever he's doing, it's all getting washed away. But it's just still a powerful example that it's a pure devotee who's guaranteed to go back to Godhead. And he also came under that influence. Because in the material world, in the entire universe, anything below the spiritual world, the modes of nature exist. Right? Lust, envy, anger, pride, greed, illusion. They basically are sort of all pervading within the material universe from Brahma Loka all the way down here and even further down below. The three modes are everywhere and they're influencing us in ways we can't even imagine. We cannot escape their influence. I mean, the only way to escape it is through pure devotional service. And even when you're doing pure devotional service, because in many ways we are engaging in pure devotional service even though we're not pure devotees, we're engaging in the acts of pure devotional service, we can get fully under the influence of this. And even if you become a pure devotee, it could still happen. It could still happen. So we shouldn't be surprised You know, a lot of times, and I know this was the case for me, and I hear it so many times, when people come to Krishna consciousness, and they see some devotee maybe get angry, they're like, oh, I didn't think they'd get angry. I'm like, well, what world are you living in? I'm like, what made you come to that conclusion? Can you please elaborate on your thoughts, why you thought that these people sitting in this room are bereft of anger? And I'm like, well, I just thought that when you do this, you don't get angry. I'm like, geez, I wish it was that easy, right? Like, I wish it was that easy. It's almost like saying, like, you go to first grade and you get your PhD. Like, it doesn't happen that way. Things don't work that way. So, and I guess, you know, I thought the same thing too. That, oh yeah, everyone here is chanting and dancing. I guess anger doesn't influence these people. And then until I became one of these people, I'm like, oh, there's still plenty of anger there. It doesn't go away that easily. Right? Like the example we give, like, you get in the shower and you don't get clean immediately. It takes a little scrubbing and a little, right? It takes a little while for the water and soap to clean us off. So the same thing happens here. And anger is one of those things. Here we're looking at all extreme example, like it's leading to killing of others. But I think one of the worst things is for us, as obviously nothing is worse than the killing people, but for us, we can just try to remember this, that it can obviously very easily lead to offending other devotees. And we know that that's one of the few things that can actually really fully destroy the Bhakti Lata beach. It can burn it up. You start all over again. Hari Bol, right? Start the whole process again. That's one of those things, like the elephant, the mad elephant. It is the mad elephant. And anger can lead us into the mad elephant offense, which is offending devotees. And literally that is the worst thing that we can do if we are hoping to practice devotional service. Because when we start offending devotees, what will happen is our enthusiasm for performing devotional service is the first thing that will go. The desire to chant, the desire to do service at the temple, the desire to come to the temple, and engage in all the different things. That's one of the first things, one of the main things that can happen. When there's no enthusiasm, then gradually, what do? It's just, then everything becomes hard. And I'm sure we've all gone through phases. I know I've gone through phases where my enthusiasm has completely hit rock bottom. And when I thought about, like, why is my enthusiasm just hitting rock bottom? The only thing, conclusion I could come to was that, well, I'm probably offending devotees, and I probably have offended devotees, and now it's just creeping up on me. Because the result of offending a devotee doesn't show up right away. Sometimes it could show up after a year, after 5 years, right? You're just kind of building up, and then Krishna finally just lets you have it all at once. Sometimes you get it piece by piece, and sometimes it can just drop out on your head like a rock. We don't know when the effects will show up. Only Krishna knows that. Only Krishna knows that. Sometimes it'll show up right away, and sometimes it could take a long time. And that's even worse, because then that can really crush us. So it's just, you know, anger is one of those things that when you start to lose your like temper, you can feel it. And you know, we have that very like brief moment. We have like a moment of choice to not let it go beyond a certain point. We could stop it like a certain point before you just completely lose it and it leads to complete delusion, as the Gita explains. But before it goes into complete delusion, there's a moment where you can stop it. Like, you know, our intelligence is telling us, don't say it, don't go there, don't do it. But if we don't take that opportunity, it's like a little window I've noticed in my own mind where I have a moment to act. But if I choose not to, and I let it go through the window, then it's over. Because what anger does is it basically shuts the intelligence down. Right, what it says here, when from anger, complete delusion arises. And from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. That's scary. Like, intelligence is lost. Intelligence is the thing that allows us to discriminate right from wrong, moral from immoral, ethical and unethical, sinful and not sinful. That, imagine that faculty being lost. Just imagine, it's like a self-driving car's GPS is gone. That's a dangerous vehicle, isn't it? right? As a dangerous vehicle. A self-driving car with the GPS thing disabled. That's what we become if we allow our anger to shut down our intelligence. And that's what it will do. And so I guess the practice is for us, one thing that we can do is we can look back at the times when we lost our cool and just think about whether there was a moment, and this is an exercise that we can try to do. Think about the last few times that you've lost your cool completely. And when you remember that time, can you remember a moment where you actually had the choice to stop yourself from acting out of anger? Like there was a little window in your mind where you could have just said, no, I'm not going to go. I'm going to shut up. I'm going to stop. I'm going to walk away. I'm going to get out of here. Think back. And when I think back, I know that there are always windows. And there are times when I just decide to ignore the window and just keep going. And I remember those moments. So I think one thing is, an exercise we can do is just to look back. Because how do we learn? We learn from history. We learn from the past. We're supposed to learn from the past. So we can think about the last few times when we lost it. And if was there a window? And you'll be sure to find that, yeah, there was a window. And I chose to let it close. Or I chose just to ignore that window and continue on with that silly, unnecessary argument that I was having with this person. And it just became carried away. And then it hurt my relationship. And now the relationship's never going to be the same again. Because, you know, words are such that once they're out, you can't really take them back. And it's possible that it can cause permanent damage to that relationship. If there was a healthy amount of affection and trust and love in that relationship, then it can be recovered. Then, if there was love and affection and trust, then the other person will understand that this was just a momentary thing. You lost your cool. You acted in a certain way. And that's not who you are, and that's not what you meant. But if it's a newer relationship, maybe a colleague or someone you've met at the temple recently and you haven't gotten to know them well, that's a relationship that can really break. And that requires, to rectify that requires humility and forgiveness, and like a genuine humility and forgiveness to hope to rectify that. And I hope that as we grow in our devotional lives, as we grow older and mature, that we are able to find the courage and the strength to be humble, to ask forgiveness, and fix the relationships that we may have broken or ruined or basically caused a disruption in. And of course, when we try to do that, we immediately start to think about the wrongs the other person has done. And then our mind, then our false ego takes over again. Yeah, well, it was their fault. I don't need to do this. You don't need to, but it's good for the soul to do it. So just to understand, it's good for the soul to try to be humble and ask for that forgiveness. Because that's the true test of all the japa and everything we're doing in our spiritual life. All the service we do, that's the true test of it. If at the end we can't even ask for forgiveness, we can't even be a little humble and suppress our false ego, what has our chanting really done for us? I mean, you can't go back to the spiritual world with a big false ego or even a little false ego. That's just, you know, it's just like you won't be allowed. The immigration will just not let you through. Jay and Vijay's like, sorry, you have not gotten the proper qualification to go through these doors. We need you to go back down, take care of a few things. You know, like when you're trying to apply for a visa, like, oh yeah, we need one more document. Oh, we need one more document. Yeah, we need you to go work on this thing called humility a little bit more and then come back and then see us in a little while. So hopefully we're able to rectify our relationships through practicing humility. And like I said, I feel like that is the ultimate test of our practice. And that we are able to control our mind, control our emotions, control our speech as a result of our emotions and anger. And I think the more... And I feel that a lot of times when somebody will say, like, or even for me, like, when you're chanting, I don't feel like I have developed a taste for chanting the holy names. I just don't feel like it still happened. But that's not the only way I feel like my spiritual life is helping me advance. It's helping me become more advanced in my ability to recognize my own self and my own tendencies. And to understand my shortcomings and try to work on them. To be able to, a little better than before, manage my emotions and not let my emotions get me carried away. So there are many ways in our spiritual life that chanting and all the service we're doing is helping us. There's many aspects of our character that are being improved if we want to allow them to be improved. And so, and I think this is very powerful, just to be able to manage our emotions and our thoughts so that we don't let them ruin our spiritual life by making us act out on them and causing a rift between ourselves and other relationships that we have in our life. So, I wanted to just spend a little time when I read this part about Janamejaya Maharaj doing the sacrifice to kill the entire race of snakes. This is what came to mind, and this is what I want to talk about. And of course, fortunately, he did submit to the request of the demigods and the sages to not go through with that. And that's another topic, that how he was actually able to submit to the wiser counsel that was present and available to him and do the right thing. So, yeah. So thank you very much. If there's any comments or questions, try to... Yes.
Yes, just a little comment. So Bhishma Dev, when he was speaking to Yudhishthira, he says, suppression of anger should be the foremost duty of all varnas and all ashram. So we can take that as a good instruction. And then Lord Chaitanya says, one should try to be humbler than a blade of grass. You know, and then he would be able to chant. When you speaking there, these things came into mind. Sometimes we have to make a conscious effort to really, you know, control anger and be humble, you know, like this, because it's part of our, you know, it's part of our duty, and I'm thinking it's an interesting topic, and I guess what's interesting also, if we can bring up more techniques how to control anger, you know, even from time to time, that's explained in class, it'd be good, you know. Like the Karmis, they, like when anger is coming up, they would take some break, you know, take some break and go away from the situation. And
that's right there, is an important technique. Just in that moment you realize I'm losing it and my intelligence is shutting down and I better back away. You know, one just clarifying thing I'll say is that in certain situations, anger is also needed. Like, Kshatriyas need anger when they're fighting. Maybe, right, a police officer needs anger to do what they're doing. If they're seeing somebody being assaulted, and they need to bring up that passion. Maybe a parent needs to apply a healthy level of anger in dealing with their child. Right, so there are healthy levels of that. I'm sort of talking about the stuff that's unhealthy and that leads to, like, offenses or degrades our own character. Yeah. But, yeah, thank you for sharing that. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for clearing the house.
Because I was just thinking during your discussion, it's very nice points you made. But it is not the anger so much we need to focus. We need to see the purpose of the anger, purpose behind the anger. Otherwise we may misunderstand. Mm. Prabhupada was angry in Miami one time. Prabhupada was angry, we just recently read, when communists took over Brisbane, next day newspaper came and Prabhupada was furious. He was so angry. The BBC reporter came and interviewed Prabhupada and they asked, what is your reaction? Prabhupada said, I will kick out there. Just like that, so angry. but that is his compassion. The purpose of his anger was nothing to do with delusion or turning into delusion or anything. It is just that he sees that those souls will be suffering. So Prabhupada had 100% legitimate right to be angry. And that is pure Krishna consciousness, that anger.
Yeah.
I see also many examples that Krishna was angry because he is feeling separation from Arjuna. In future, if Bhishma kills him, I will miss my friend, and Krishna became so angry. Actually, it became a rasa, taste. That Bhishmadeva actually gave up everything and he was tasting that form. Mm-hmm. The Ishtadev is Partha Sarati. So anger has I look at it, the purpose behind the anger, not so much of anger.
Yeah.
Because Narottama Das Thakur made a song about it. He said, Kama Krishna Karmarpane Krodha Bhakta Deshi Jane. Krodha, anger, krodh, Bhakta Deshi Jane. And he gave an example of Hanuman. Hanuman was so angry against Ravana that he burned down the whole thing. So they asked the question, did Hanuman, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur asked that question, when he was furious, angry, and he burned down the Lanka, was his humility present or not? So Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur said he had 100% humility. So anger doesn't mean necessarily bad, it could be 100% humility too. It depends on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thank you. I thought you had a question.
So, did you learn?
Oh, yeah.
Thank
you. Well, I think that you were differentiating between, you just said, like, you know, righteous anger versus when we just, like, lose our temper. So it's like two different things, sort of. You were differentiating that. I was also thinking how important it is to, alongside our devotional service, to also acknowledge like what are our, like, somebody can push our buttons, like we all have our buttons, you know, from the past. And there's this one author, he calls it like, we all have like a pain body, just from our, you know, childhood or whatever, there are things that are like painful. And you know, if somebody like pushes that, even slightly, you know, it can make a lot of damage. So I think it's really important to, you know, acknowledge what is our pain body. I think it's a really nice term. Some author uses it. Especially like two people's pain bodies like collide. You know, it can cause a lot of damage. So I think it's really important to search out like what are my buttons and what is like my pain body and heal that also. Yeah. Alongside doing devotional service, it's really important.
Yeah, that's a great point. And yeah, just recognizing what is the pain point, right, that is going to trigger me. And I also think that anger is a very valid human emotion. It's just a valid, we are humans. Anger, sadness, frustration, all of these things are part of what makes us human. So Krishna consciousness or any spiritual path is not going to prevent us just from like, oh, now I'm just Zen all the time. Like, that's not really human, that's robotic. So if someone says something unjust, unfair, you see someone criticizing someone unfairly, yes, we're going to get angry. If someone hurts somebody we love or whatever, we're going to get angry. It's part of what makes us human. And I think too often, like, people who are in a spiritual circle expect you to never get angry. I'm just like, that's insane. That's actually insane. There's something wrong if someone is never getting angry. Because you would have to literally be just like living in a forest where there's nothing around to not get that. And even then you'll find ways to get angry because you'll remember your past. Right? So you can't escape that. So yeah, it is a normal, valid human emotion. If we've reacted to it in a negative way, we try to apologize and move forward and recognize, yep, this is what pushes me, and gradually work on that. And then be grateful that, hey, this person came into my life, to show me, yeah, this is still my pain point, and now I just need to keep working on it. So, yeah, recognizing it, I think, a huge part of just our Krishna consciousness and self-awareness. Thank you. Thank you very much. Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, ki, Srila Prabhupada, ki,
Yeah.